Welcome back to the Supporting Women in Social Enterprise podcast. This is your one-stop shop to give you that leg up in starting, running, and sustaining your social venture.
And understanding the social enterprise world we work, play, and have fun in a little better. I'm Nicola Talkington.
And I'm Fran Barker, and we're from Flourish Together CIC. We're an organisation that helps women changemakers like you to flourish. In this episode, we're having a conversation about women's safety. This is a trigger warning. There will be themes of sexual assault, abuse, and violence towards women.
Okay, so earlier this year, we were approached by some MMU business and law students interested to explore this topic further with us. As part of the final year studies, they recognised some of the work that we've been doing with a very diverse range of women across Greater Manchester. They found that previously we'd created a policy report for the GMCA, which explored the needs of a wide range of women affected by the criminal justice system and the safety of women, and reducing the number of women who become victims of crime was a key part of this. So it's great to be able to continue this conversation further and reconnect women in our network around this topic. We're really pleased that they approached us to join together on this.
I absolutely agree. How great that the students of MMU have come together and sought out Flourish to have these conversations and really drive this narrative and this conversation forward. So what's coming up? Well, we've gathered a breadth of women for this episode who are all helping to combat violence against women and girls. From an activist to a pub landlord, we've got women leading movements or working with young people.
Also, coming up later, we have an interview with the powerhouse that is Charlene Small, who we supported to develop MGTY, that stands for Manchester's Got Talent Youth. And she chats to our podcast producer, Vic, about the reality of safety amongst young people in the community that she's working with and who she seeks to support every day.
What I noticed with the youth community, they talk about a lot of gang crime, which is very important. However, I found that girls were getting forgotten.
But first, we're here at the Old Abbey Tap House in Hume, Manchester, for a panel discussion on women's safety, hosted by Flourish and the students from Manchester Met, as we mentioned before. Each of the students involved poses a question to the people on our panel. I start by asking the panel to introduce themselves.
Hiya, I'm Rachel Everoa and I'm the landlady of the Old Abbey Tap House and I work in community development.
Hi, I'm Dee Sheehan. I'm the co-lead of the safety group in GM for Women 2028.
My name's Sam and I've been a feminist activist for over 10 years and a survivor of male violence.
So the first question that we've got is, are women's freedom and ability to get out and access what they need on their doorstep better or worse than previous times?
Yeah, I think it really does depend on your demographic, your age, your background, your cultural background, and where you go and the transport you use. I think it's safer than when I was a student in Manchester, but then I got followed in the daylight, so it's really hard to say why you get followed. Yeah, it's just a really hard question and it depends on your circumstances.
First and foremost, it depends which women you're talking about, because some women may have cultural barriers, for instance, to that. So in terms of women like me, I think it is a lot easier because I think it's become much more acceptable for women to go into pubs and things than it was when I was your age. And you know, there's a kind of expectation that student life will involve lot of socialising. So I think it's easier in that sense. I think it's probably a lot harder in some ways as well, because there's a lot of expectations on young women these days. I think, you know, the easy access pornography is changing the landscape massively. And so I think it's a bit of each.
Linking on to the spiking thing, I can now be relieved that I went to university in like 2007 to 2010. I had no real fear. Like, yeah, attacks on women by males did happen, but it wasn't as prevalent, and the internet pornography had taken off, but I don't think there was quite the extent, and we didn't all start off with smartphones and social media to the same degree with the violent and degrading content that is out there.
What are the downsides or the impact to the wider nighttime economy, communities or society if women of all ages don't feel safe to come out? What role does business in the nighttime economy play here?
I'm really proud of all my staff that are over there. We are like a female-led venue. Most of our staff are female. We take it really seriously. If you go into most pubs, you won't see that, I don't think. And I think that makes a really big difference from the beginning that there's lots of women here. And if I was going out, I would look at how the security treat you when you go in. I'd look at how the women feel behind the bar. Like, you can tell a dodgy bar because the girls will be a bit scared. I think if you're organising an event, you should take that into account. You should go maybe have a meeting with the venue manager and you'll get a sense of that person and the culture. And I think the culture starts with the people at the top and the staff, and you'll sense that. When I was a student, I took out all the call-outs from the police and licensing, and I went through all the posters and all the music genres and the way they advertise their nights. And you can almost definitely tell which nights are going to be like the meat market nights. And the promoters set the culture. I hate to say that, but there's promoters in the city that were student promoters when I was... I'm 35. When I was 21, they were running club nights. They're still running student club nights. You know that culture that's going to seep through if that person's running that night? And I'm sorry it's that way. And I'm sorry there's horrible predatory men in their 30s in the music industry. I will try and get rid of them for you. But it seeps down and they see all you young students and they're not cool. Those DJs in their 30s are not cool. Those promoters in their 30s are not cool. Like, I'm going to start calling them out more for you. And I'm sorry. The worst thing I'd say about the nighttime economy is there's always a huge turnover of young people who want to get involved in it. So it's always very exploitative, and there's always another young person that's going to take that role. So it's really hard sometimes to make a stand in the nighttime economy. There are changes happening. Me and my best friend are trying to make some changes behind the scenes. I'm hoping the music industry will have its Me Too movement sometime. And there's a lot of people that were allowed to get away with things that I hope your generation won't let happen. But I will say this, I've been running events since I was 16, and I've actually seen the behaviour of men improve massively, especially young men. I'm really impressed now when I hear conversations with young men, and I really think we need to be careful with this narrative of men bad, women good, because it's very grey. And actually, I hate to say this, I'm a musician and I run events, but I'm actually seeing the behaviour of women be worse, and I've actually been sexually assaulted by women twice now in the last year running events. So I think we need to have a conversation about consent, drinking. Unfortunately, lots of people are damaged and they go out at night time to drink because they're damaged. And I think that needs to be addressed as well. And what we see more and more at the pub is people with mental health issues or people who've taken substances before they even get to the venue, and we have to look after them. Mm-hmm. And what I really, really would call out is binge drinking culture in the student world. I didn't go to uni until I was 23. I never did binge drinking. But at uni, you had to binge drink before you even went out. Why is it me and my staff's responsibility to look after you if you've come off your face on a bottle of vodka that you bought from Asda and then you collapse outside our venue? We will look after you. We'll pay for a taxi to get you home. But Asda doesn't pay for a taxi to get you home. No one else is looking after you. And I'm a small social enterprise with a tiny, tiny budget. Like, that £10 is someone's wage, you know? So I hate to say this, but I came from the free party scene where you take responsibility for yourself when you go out and you look after your friends. And I think I want to see that again, people looking after their friends when they go out.
I mean, I hear I was definitely at uni, like, drinking before we'd go out, then we'd go out. And then even like my friend had, he put his hand up my skirt and I kicked him. And then I was like, oh, I know, I feel bad for kicking him. And then everyone's like, no, he did deserve that. So it's not like always strangers, is it? It's often people you know. And I've had friends who've been spiked, not with like needles, but with things being poured in the drink. So having that constant vigilance over your drink, that's annoying because you've bought that drink and then you just want to relax and have fun. And so I think that's got an impact, because if you don't feel free, your choices are restricted in a way that men's aren't to the same degree. Like, yeah, men still have fears when they go out and they still have to do some safety work to a degree, but not the extent of women having to text people like when you're home safe and that kind of thing, which in my experience when I got seriously sexually assaulted, I did not, like, technically I did get home safe. So I was like, okay, I'll text my friends because they want to know I'm not like in a ditch. But you know, the impact of that assault to the state was financially a lot. There's an Instagram handle called Feminist Invoicing, and it's about all of the costs, like the time it took me to go through that police process, which I shouldn't have had to go through, but I didn't want him to do that to anybody else. Society is massively impinged, isn't it, when women don't feel safe to come out because you're having house parties, and I don't think they're safe. And it's just like a total lose-lose for women because you're told, like, oh, get in a taxi. I don't feel safe in a taxi. There's not many women driving taxis. There might be a lovely bar like this. Then you've got to get in a taxi with a man you don't know. Or a man will like, oh, I'll offer you a lift. I'm like, I can't trust you either. So I really want a world where women could just go out and do whatever we want and have fun and thrive rather than be totally being called paranoid when evidence dictates we've got every reason to not just feel unsafe. We are unsafe, and especially women who might be disabled and, as we've said, have other vulnerabilities like mental health. Like, I wanted to say, I used to work for a charity that supports homeless people and women who might have, or people who might have been involved in the sex industry. And I remember when a woman reported a punter for violence because she had a conviction or a thing hanging over her about her potential offending behaviour. The police wanted to deal with that. There's no incentive for that woman to help the state in catching this perpetrator because they're bothered. I think they need to separate those two things and just treat that separately, because she's doing, any woman who reports a crime, we don't get much out of it. We just get extra trauma. So that needs to change.
One of the issues is that for a lot of people don't want to come into town at night because they don't like the environment. So I live in South Manchester, and what's happening in South Manchester is they're making going out locally much more popular. So that is boosting my local economy, but it's to the detriment of the city centre economy. You know, there's a real knock-on effect of this atmosphere and the behaviour of certain people. Yeah, I'd like to add that last year, two academics, Rosie Shorrocks and Anna Sanders, did a project in combination with the GM for Women, and it's called What Women Want. And they did a survey across women in Greater Manchester. They found that the perceptions of safety for women and women were really low, especially for parks and nighttime economy. And the 16 to 24 age group were the ones that had the lowest perception of safety in those areas. Yeah, so we're not helping.
What impact do you think public policy has on women's safety?
One of the issues here is that it's all a bit piecemeal. I think there's lots of definitions that need clarifying. What is sexual violence? You know, we've heard all these reports about misogyny and various other isms in the police. And I do think there's a massive training issue, but it's not just the police. It's other public services as well. So first of all, we all need to be singing from the same hymn sheet. So when we talk about something, we're all talking about the same thing. Secondly, what I would really like to see is that the message from the strategy goes through all of public services, like the message in a piece of rock, and it absolutely doesn't at the moment. So the message from the strategy should be reflected in licensing policy. So one example would be, we've got the Is It OK campaign and Education for Boys and Men. Then we've got the granting of a licence to Hooters, that, you know, outside a tram stop near a school.
Yeah.
And that kind of discord is not going to create any change. And I think the strategy is based on a lot of really good work, good research, good methodologies and things. What we've not seen yet is the action plan, because the strategy is like an intention. It's a direction we want to go in. What's actually going to happen is in the action plan, and I think we need to be demanding to see that action plan and have a voice in whether it's working or not.
I mean, I was campaigning against male violence before I was assaulted. I guess it's quite obvious to think, oh, she was assaulted and then she took an interest. But actually, I remember the first Reclaim the Night march I came on was in Manchester. city centre, and I think the right to protest is really important. And I used to feel safe protesting, and I used to trust the police as a child. I grew up thinking that the police were in authority and they were good people trying to catch bad guys. I don't think that anymore. I've seen their behaviour on the protests. I think they need to protect our right to free speech. They need to protect our right to assemble and express ourselves. I feel like Reclaim the Night is doing the police's job for them. And I heard this guy say, oh, well, you know, you're not going to stop any rapist in a bush from leaping out. Like, no, we're not. But I think women feeling empowered, even if it's for one night of the year, which is not enough, is really important. And for people to hear the chants that no means no, and that whatever we wear, wherever we go, that is the case. But I do think there needs to be a bit more people power, because we do need the prevention. I don't want men to be caught once they've spiked a woman. I don't want people to be caught once they've... I don't want them to be deterred from taking some weapon or intent to harm a woman or a girl out. I want them to not want to do that in the first place. I want it to not even enter their minds. Like, I was walking through Manchester at like 5:30 in the morning with a friend because we were getting a really early train, and I saw this man, and he had his trousers by his ankles. He was really drunk. He was leaning over a tram. He was shouting nonsense over, and he was really vulnerable. And what did I think at that point? Like, we've got various options. We do bystander intervention and we try and help him. I felt that was putting myself at risk. Other people would be thinking, if that was a woman in that position, I don't fancy her chances. I think somebody would have taken advantage. Not everybody, but it only takes one person to ruin that individual's life. So I think public policy, in a way, feels inconsequential when it's just you and this one other person. But it can help with the education and the ability to do something about it. But I also feel it puts me at risk. I've certainly got into altercations when I've seen a man mistreating a woman and I've intervened. I've put myself at risk, and I'm willing to do it. Like, if that's how I go, then I'll be doing what I love. But shouldn't happen, should it? Like, I'm not the strongest person. So, yeah, I'd like to see some self-defence classes in schools for people as well.
I was just in a meeting this morning with someone from GMP who's one of the leaders of the campaign to turn this around. And they have done work with the nighttime economy. They have done work with transport. And they've had now the... a really good domestic abuse training. I'm on the Women and Girls Panel Violence Against Women and Girls subgroup, so we have a regular dialogue with the police. You know, they are looking to us for support with their actions, and they are really trying to turn things around. You know, there's in Rochdale, they've just been a court case where someone was found guilty of domestic abuse over a period of 20 years... and over 4 relationships, and he's been given a 23-year sentence. Now, that's a step forward, and that's a credit to the work being done in Rochdale by people trying to change the attitudes.
Hasn't there been a list set up too? You can check your partner now on a list.
Yeah, there's Claire's Law.
Claire's Law.
It's just that's one example, and there's loads that's not happening properly. So I don't think it's something that can happen quickly. And it is the changing profile of the people in more senior positions in the police that's helping have that impact.
Do you not think the universal credit needs to be changed? Because loads of women end up... loads of women end up stuck because they can't leave their partners because they don't have the money to do it. And the way universal credits change and housing benefits, you can't really leave your partner. Or if you do leave your partner, you're homeless and you're in a women's shelter and you're in just as bad a circumstances sometimes because of that. So I think it's economics as well.
Absolutely. And the sector's underfunded. And there's 8,000 women were turned away from refuges because there wasn't anywhere to put them.
I guess that's what happens. Like, because I work with women who've come out of custody, and so many of them, over half of women in prison have felt unsafe. And I was like, it must be higher than that. I don't think they know what safe means, because they don't want to go out at night when they come back to live in the community, and they need to build relationships and housing that's safe for them. And we've seen some of these dodgy, like, hostel-y type places that are given money, and they're like, oh, we've got support for the women. And when they're pressed, what is the support? They're like, well, there's some CCTV. It's like, well, you're not being given money for that. You're just profiting. And I think if people actually wanted to change, they could read all the myriad of data that's already been collected year in, year out, D&I fill in, numerous consultations, surveys, interviews, focus groups, same old, same old. If someone actually just implemented the recommendations, we'd be way ahead and we wouldn't have to be sat here. Because 10 years ago, I thought, right, we can smash the patriarchy in a year. And now I'm like, oh, I hope I'm still alive to see like a little bit of like progress.
I'm Ellis. And a couple of you mentioned like transport, like taxis and public transport. I was wondering whether you guys think whether enough is done for women's safety.
When we first opened the pub, I made friends with a local taxi firm and I trusted them, and that's who I advertised. And then Uber came along and everyone now uses Uber in Bolt. Again, we need to look at employment laws, who takes responsibility. Black cabs, they have to do proper tests and they have to be licensed with the local council and they have to pay a big fee. Black cabs, at least they have to, you know, that number and that plate, you can, they're registered with the council and you can kind of report them. But as you say, it's not always very nice as a woman in a taxi. I love my electric bike. I wasn't a keen cyclist. I got an electric bike. They go really, really fast. No one can keep up with you. I really, really recommend one of those.
I'd like to see the buses and the trains and the trams investing in guards, putting them back in. Because what they're relying on at the moment is the presence and the actions of bystanders. You know, even on tram stops, they're all steps down from the road. They can be very deserted. And there are people who hang around them and makes it unpleasant. So I think there needs to be more physical people out there. Everything seems to be about mopping up after the event and not preempting.
I'm talking about mopping up after the event. When I was assaulted, I met this guy at a bus stop. I was waiting for a bus after a night out in London. And he was loitering around. I now know this. And he got on the same bus as me and then got off the bus, assaulted me, and then I got on. He went away. I got on the next bus and some men on the bus laughed at me. And I thought there was an opportunity from the first bus driver to think, does she know that guy? And then there was opportunities for other people on the bus to hear me saying, get your hand off my leg, that kind of thing. And everyone probably just thought, oh, he's probably just her boyfriend. It's none of our business and all that. So those were two missed opportunities. In terms of guards on trains, I mean, I'd like to see later trains, because I had a bit too much fun in the gay village last week and I missed my last train. There's no help if you're in that situation. Like, you've got to sort yourself out. And when there's diversions on routes, that you'll see a sign on the bus stop like diverted route, and you're like, where? Like, it's assumed that every single person has a fully charged Google Maps that's functional with data, and we don't. And it's also assumed that you can just ask somebody to help you, and you can't. So I think transport is a major issue. The CCTV on the bus I was on, I was really never an advocate of CCTV, but in my case it did help convict this guy who ended up in prison. But I think if he'd been white and I hadn't, it would have been a different story. So yeah, I think refuges need to be accessible, transport needs to be accessible for disabled people, information needs to be communicated to people. As for taxis, you need to be safe waiting for them. Like, and taxi drivers need to trust you. Like, when I ring up and say, could I have a taxi from this club? And they're like, oh, how do we know where you're going to be there? I'm like, well, you don't. You've got, that's how your business operates. Like, you've got to believe that I've called you because I want to get in your taxi. And yeah, there's a chance that I won't be there. But otherwise, how am I going to get home?
Yeah. I mean, I think Manchester is so much safer than London. I used to spend so much time in London as a teenager and in my early 20s, and I feel so much safer in Manchester. You've only had two or three times when I've not been helped, but if you make a big scene, someone jumps in. But it's like you say, it's really, really hard to tell the dynamics of a relationship. Mm. And at the pub, quite often, people might be here on a date or they might be here with their boyfriend, and it's really, really hard to figure out the social dynamics. And sometimes when we have intervened thinking something's happening, the person's turned against us and said, stay out of the way. So I say this quite a lot, but in hospitality, we're really on minimum wage. We're seen as low skilled. We're meant to be an expert in wine, drinks. We're meant to be counsellors. We're now also meant to be stopping sexual assault. You know, there's people get paid a lot of money who are meant to be solving these problems. And why is it, like you say, put on to us? Mm. And so I think my staff are amazing, but at the same time, I want them to be safe. And I don't think there should be situations where maybe they shouldn't have to intervene. So it's a really, really hard one. How do I keep my people here safe as well?
I remember at uni, I'd had another incident with a man touching my bum, and I'd reported it. And he's like, all right, what you do is go back, you know, find him and then, like, bring him to the bar, like, you know, acting, and then we'll deal with it. I'm like, seriously, I'm like, I'm here for a night out. But I just wanted to say thank you to Yes Bar in Manchester, because a guy, I think it was the Valentine's Day before lockdown, and a guy outside Yes Bar, nothing to do with the bar at all, touched my bum on the way out, and I thought, right, I shouted, stop touching me and give up and everything. And this man said at the bar, I saw that, and then I rung it the next day and said, do you happen to have any CCTV of what happened? And he said, I'll look for you. And he believed me. He said it shouldn't be part of a night out. And I thought, I could not have asked for a better response from a bar. And he's like, I'm really sorry, I hope it didn't ruin your night, and I hope you'll come back to our bar. And of course I will, because it was just somebody outside. Also, in terms of transport on the train, I think the campaign is amazing on the National Rail. That's like, harassment is a crime, don't touch people, staring at people in a leery way, it's harassment. I think I can't fault that, and I often can pick fault with posters designed at, like, don't get drunk. There's a lot of victim blaming there, but that campaign is good. And I think they help give me the validation if I'm on a train, which I've been on, and men are like saying, oh, I'm trying to chat to you, like, I'm trying to read my book. And then it escalates quite quick if you say no, because they then say, oh, I'm just having a joke, or you're stuck up, you're frigid, whatever. And then they're like, oh, what would you do if I kissed you? And I'll be like, well, I'll report you. And they think, oh, maybe it won't be taken seriously. But there was actually an officer in London whose job, a police officer, was to deal with sexual assaults on public transport. I'm like, what world are we in? Like, just let that sink in. There's somebody whose job it is to deal with the extent of mostly men harassing mostly women on public transport. Like, you're trying to get from A to B. Like, they need help, but the offender programs in prisons don't work.
So the next question we have is, what do you think some of the biggest safety challenges facing women in Manchester are currently?
Mental health, economy. I think the lack of services, like, are we being reduced more? I think we're going to see more domestic abuse because women can't leave their partners. Basically, when the economy goes shit, women get shitted on even more. And I think we're going to see that happen with the cost of living crisis, unfortunately. And you're going to see women going out less and having less of a social life and being less spaces for them to go and talk. So, yeah, I think the economy will really affect women's safety.
And I would add to that the prosecution people, what's called the CPS, the really appallingly low rate of prosecution and then conviction for rape and domestic abuse is just absolutely unbelievable. And I think that's a threat to women, because it makes it feel like it's okay to do it. And it doesn't feel like there's any consequence, and indeed there isn't any consequence.
I was really lucky. My friends organised a session where there's two amazing women who started a Krav Maga group, so we took all the staff and we learned Krav Maga, and it really helped my confidence, and they really make you get violent and beat the shit out of each other. And I'm not saying that's what you need to do, but as women, we're conditioned to not fight back. And in all these situations, when I look back, I just did the flop. I did the flop or the pander to them, or I didn't want them to feel awkward or vulnerable. And I think as I got older, I've got more in that fuck off. And now when a man starts on me, I just make a massive scene and go crazy and outwit the weirdos. And it really works, because no one wants to start on a crazy person. But I've had to learn that, because as a woman, you're so conditioned to be like, oh, I'm so sorry. And that took a lot of unlearning. So I really recommend, I'm not saying that's going to stop it, but building up your confidence to be able to set that boundary before it even gets to that stage really has helped me.
I think it's really, really important that we bring, you know, these organisations to the light, really publicise that they exist and the work they do, and get it A, recognised, and B, funded. And then a second point I've been involved in a few organisations that say we want men here. We want people of, you know, people of colour here. Obviously, if they do come, we're not making them feel welcome because they don't stay.
We just want to say thank you as well.
Thank you. That's really good.
A huge thanks to MMU students for organising the discussion, our wonderful panel, and of course the Old Abbey Tap House for hosting. So it's been frustrating to hear that in places that women are coming together and fighting these fires. And what we hear throughout that is the frustration at the politics, at the nighttime economy, and at the gaps in the support that are really kind of needing to be filled. But on the flip side, we also hear about the beautiful empowerment, collaboration and support of women supporting women. And as Rachel quite rightly says, of men supporting women. And that's what I'd like to kind of continue and just keep in mind is that the best way we can approach this whilst we're driving forward that collaboration and rollout of effective policy is to look after each other along the way.
Absolutely. It's disappointing that we're still having this conversation in 2023 and we seem to keep going around in circles. But I think keeping talking about this, looking at solutions and opportunities together and coming forward to have honest and open and importantly, current conversations keeps these challenges and frustrations at the forefront of people's minds and helps us realise that, you know, there's more to do, there's a lot more to do. Speaking of which, let's hear from Shah at Manchester's Got Talent, supporting young people to lead their own change and unlock more creative and entrepreneurial talent in young people in Manchester along the way. We felt it was really important to add in more experiences of younger people, and especially from those who support them. So let's hear from Shah.
When we think about women's safety, especially on the streets, it's easy to get bogged down in strategy talk, who's to blame, who can fix the problem. We often forget about the actual reality on the ground in our communities. So joining me now is Charlene Small, a passionate community change maker living in inner city Manchester. As a mum, a youth worker, advocate and now social entrepreneur, she has a wealth of real lived experience, but not just from her perspective, but her community of young people and adults that she works with.
My name is Shah Sangster. I'm a founder of an organisation called MGTY.
I start by asking Shah how MGTY all started.
It literally started by accident. Me and my son have a really great relationship. When social media came on, my son started doing little tricks and filming us more, because everybody was bored, lockdown, no one was doing anything, so we started doing that. So loads of people, loads of young people used to add me because they used to see the fun videos and TikToks that I used to do with my son, and then they just started talking to me because they thought I was fun. They thought, this woman, how's this woman? She's like nearly 80 years old and she's just crazy. You know what I mean? I think it was fascinating to the young people and adults to find out about me. I just started talking to young people and they were pretty, mental health was pretty low for them, and they were posting loads of videos, but they were bored. So I said to them, right, let's make this exciting. And we've got the to send the videos in and we put them online on this, made an Instagram website. We had loads of young people sending in dance things that they were doing at home, rap songs that they were doing at home. And we literally put it into a competition and I'd award them £50 gift vouchers and stuff like that. And then from then, my son and his friends and the people we connected with started saying, can we do other stuff? And we started doing online chats and we started talking about topical issues, and we brought up some serious issues, like if he was in a gang and this happened and what would he do? You know, there's loads of different issues we put in there for young people to think about. It became a group where we connected with like people on a regular basis, and it became an actual organisation. I couldn't just go back to work and cut off the people that I've connected with. You know, it became a group where we went out in the community and we made a lot of changes. And we give back to community, litter picking, raising money for cancer. We do work with LGBT. We talk about anything that the young people that, you know, things that we talk about in the living room at home with your friends, talk on the phone. We actually highlight that and bring that to the stage for making awareness of it, because we can't do anything at home just talking about it. These are important changes that we're actually affecting everybody. Let's talk about it out here and let's see what we can do about it in a positive way. But with me, I like to have a lot of fun. I'm very grounded. So we do like roller skating events. We do events, performers, all ages, poets, singers, dancers, all sorts. We do loads of little things, hiking together. We things that are out, activities. And that really brings people together. And that's what we need in community. Just bringing people together is so easy. We just make it difficult. And that's what MGTY is about, bringing people together and encouraging people and confidence building.
And I can confirm right now that Shah is not 80 years old.
I'm 79. I'm a normal mum just from the community. I didn't go to uni and think, right, I'm going to be a youth community worker. Nope. I used to work in Asda. Then I was a beautician and I'd done other things. This was just through the lockdown and it's become my path that I found that is, I didn't realise. People always say, well, you wish you did this early. And I don't think I did because I think I needed my own experiences that I had to have an understanding to what I do now. So I work with homeless. I work within the health organisations. I work with, although we're a unity organisation, I also do deal with certain cultures like my own Black and African, or it might be Muslim culture, or it might be a Sikh culture. Because of the different priority in the group, we do a lot of different things. So we hit a lot of issues and awareness that's in the community, and also have fun.
It's the main thing. It's to have fun, please.
Yeah, definitely.
And those conversations that you're having with young people, does the topic of safety come up, especially around women and girls?
Yes, this is something that we've been trying to highlight. The conversation of safety in girls is very important with the Manchester's Got Talent youth, because I'm a mother. Like I said, I'm a mother. I'm not just a youth worker, youth organisation. And it helps to have a balance of both, because a lot of youth workers have the life experience, you know, us in the community have. They've been to college and had a good education and done the right things. Whereas me, I tried, but I made mistakes. I was a rebel at some times and I didn't want to be a rebel, you know, laugh about it, but I didn't want to be a rebel. You know, you're just trying to make decisions. We're all trying to make a way out of the community, honestly. So it's good to have a balance of both of us have an understanding that we can come together and do things right. So what I noticed with the youth community, they talk about a lot of gang crime, which is very important. However, I found that girls were getting forgotten and the girls' safety wasn't getting highlighted as much. I feel like social media became a quite highlight in girls' safety. You know, girls are at home bored and it's all about what you're posting online a lot as well. And what they're seeing online, they're taking it on board as their teachers now and what they're supposed to look like. You know, I see young girls that are on social media. When I see them walking down the street, I don't know that's the same person, because they totally have Snapchat as they're using Snapchat as the mirrors. And that's not what you look like. It's really sad because it's starting to cause anxiety within a lot of women, girls, women as well, and girls. Because I remember sitting down and a woman was saying, how do you think, she had a clip, a nice picture of Snapchat. And she said, how do you think I get to look like that in real life? Like, how would I get my skin? And I just looked at them and went, why? What's wrong with you? That's you. But, you know, nobody looks like that in real life. We've all got pigments in our skin. Mm-hmm. None of us look, not even Beyonce looks like how she good, as good as she does. And even if she does, she's got about how 50 zillion pounds. She's got cheeks look anything but clear on her skin. The amount of money she's got. We can't compare ourselves to these people. We're not, you know, and it's happening. And these women are doing it. Now, they've got young girls. And it's going on to the young girls. And then it's causing them to have issues. And then they're posting themselves online. I know women that have posted themselves, haven't even been anywhere, but they're dressed up to just post online. Now, from here now, what happens is attention happens. A lot of these social media pages are open as well. So if the women are doing it, and then the young girls are following, you know, what they see and think, oh, that's a big woman thing. It looks good. I want to do it. Then what happens is they're getting attention online by men, obviously, and men are going to start dropping in the inbox. Now, to look like this, it costs money. And I know for a fact that girls are now sleeping with men for money just to look good, to post it on Instagram. And it's not all girls. It's not all women. It's still causing insecurities. And for example, another thing is when they're seeing what they're seeing online, it's good to say, you know, you should be able to wear what you want, but we live in a world where really you can't, you know, because you walk down the road like that, you're going to get certain attention and you might get approached in a way you don't want to be approached.
Why can't a girl wear what she wants to walk down the street?
Exactly. Half of these women are not dressing how they want. They're dressing how they think other people want them to dress. If you wear what you want and you're comfortable in what you're wearing, yeah, you'll be fine. Do you know what I mean? I really think you'll be okay. You'd be more confident in yourself to handle any wolf whistles or whatever that happens to you. Do you get what I mean?
Do you feel safe walking around the street at night?
I don't feel safe with my son walking down the road. Honestly, no, I wouldn't feel safe. I literally don't like going out at night. So I feel like there's a lot of incidences that happen that don't get highlighted. Think if there's a gun crime, it's all over the news. If a girl gets raped, or if this happens, or if that happens, sexual assault, it doesn't really get highlighted. You know, there is a few that you do see in the paper, but I know there's a lot more that happens. And yeah, it does scare me.
A lot more that happens that the women don't report them.
And that, a lot of women don't report them as well.
I asked Shah if she thinks women and girls are less likely to report the microaggressions we may experience. You know, stuff like catcalling, that sort of thing.
I feel like there's no one to complain to about it as well as a woman. And I don't think it's taken on as seriously even when you are. Especially if you're a good-looking woman like myself. You know, but
of course,
talking about, especially if you're a woman that looks after yourself and look carry yourself in a nice way, in a certain way, it can be looked on. Well, she looks like the sort of person that would want that attention when she literally, that's just how she is. Do you get what I mean?
Almost like we've heard the narrative before, haven't we, Shah, about, well, she deserved it. She was asking for it.
Yeah, I've heard that. And like, for example, I was speaking about something. I went to an event. I won't say where it was or when it was, but I went to an event one time, and after the event I spoke to a few of the gentlemen, and they were really nice that had been performing and stuff, and there was an after party, and they was like saying, oh, you know, I was like explaining who I was, I do MGTY and this and that, and, oh, that's great, you should take my number and stuff like that, it seemed so professional, so we exchanged numbers and everything, and they said, oh, you're going to the after party. So I don't even know if I'm going to be going to the after party, but we'll speak soon, left it as that. I woke up in the morning, got home, forgot about it. I woke up in the morning, this guy had phoned me like 3 times in the morning. And I was thinking, what, why did he ring me? So I rang him and I was like saying, oh, I missed your call, is everything, did you mean to call me? And he said, yeah, I was thinking where you was because I was waiting for you. And I said, wait for me at the after party. Why? So he says, oh, because, no, but, you know, he goes, nah, but, you know what, I was kind of upset with you, you know, because I thought you was going to come to the after party and then we could go to the hotel. His hotel.
What?
And I was just like, I don't know where, at what point. I said, I don't know. Tell me where, at which point in our conversation I made you feel like I'd want to go back to your hotel at 3 o'clock in the morning. What for? He said, oh, just to discuss your work stuff and that. Now, this guy is somebody that has really got good connections. And this is his way of saying that I can come through the door through him. I was just like, I just put the phone. I didn't even finish the comment. I didn't even say anything else. I literally don't know what to say. I said, no, it's okay. I said, no, it's okay. Thank you. I put the phone down. I was offended, like, literally. And I went out that night in a little dress. It was nighttime. It was a club night. And I was going out. And I went out, went in my car. Everybody else dressed nice as well. And I went out. And because I was so, in my little skirt, I must be, you know what I mean? I was just like, that's what, in my head, that's what he must have thought. Because I don't know what I did, why you would. I didn't hug him. I didn't.
It's really shocking, though, that we have this, as women have this, like, narrative now of us going, well, what did I do wrong? Was it my fault? Was I dressed wrong? And that's, it's not our fault, is it? Nothing to do with you, Shah, being,
no,
you know, looking absolutely amazing in your dress and wanting to network with someone after a works event. And then some.
It's offensive when they look at you as a sexual object.
Yeah. I'm angry for you right now. I bet you were fuming.
Yeah, I was literally fuming because I was brought up with my grandma. My grandma was one of those that even if somebody came to the house, you have to. We might have been playing in mud outside in the park, but if somebody came in the house, she'd be saying, "Charlie, somebody come and get upstairs, clean up your face. Now spray at the front and just skip." To get what I mean? We didn't have to look like prim and proper. We'd have to look, we could have looked right there, but we could appropriate, wash up your hands and face and then, you know, look at presentable. Now, I've always been brought up in that way. When you've been brought up like that, you literally have that embedded in your head. I'm not going to change for anybody else, but, you know, people meet in each other in work. I get that. However, there's a way it happens, you know, you get to know, especially when it's in work, you get to know people, it happens naturally, do you know what I mean? You don't literally see a woman start at your workplace and go up to say, yeah, I'm going to see if I can get one over on her. and then start on it. And I don't think girls should do it to guys either, because it's not fair on either of us. And especially as a single woman, when you're older as well, when you're older in business as well, and you meet men and they think she's single, they think you must be desperate for a guy. No, I ain't. I just don't want one. Do you get what I mean? It's literally in the start. That conversation can come around sometimes where once a man can feel like you're single, that like you must be like, no. Ego, like, no.
There's a few things we've covered about safety in women. There's online role models around that. There's not feeling safe on the street, especially at night, even not feeling safe when you're with your son. And there's a woman in business sometimes not feeling safe.
Mm-hmm.
Often, women and young people are put into this homogenous lump, aren't they? We need to address women's safety. We need to address young people and all that stuff that comes along with it. But there are cultural differences. There are economical differences in the rich, you know, tapestry that makes up our communities. How do we, and you obviously, you just spoke to me at the beginning, connecting with and serving lots of different communities and diversities. So we're designing like women's safety strategies and all that, or gender-based strategies. How do we make sure that everyone's voice is heard?
When it comes to women-based strategies, I'm going to be honest, we have to be honest. We cannot sit here and say it's okay for women to walk down the road in a miniskirt and a little top at 3 o'clock in the morning. No, she's not asking to be raped. No, she's not. But it could happen, because this is society that we live in. We have to be real about it so we can be heard. We can't just be like, just have our say and, you know, not listening. We have to give and take. Yeah?
Yeah.
So let's be honest about us as well, how we are in the society that we live, unfortunately. And then make sure that others, and then so they can hear us too. Get the men involved as well, like getting them to hear our voices. Because they've got daughters, they've got sisters, they've got wives that go out on a night out. Let them understand what we feel and go through. You know, another thing, some men don't understand that there's been situations where there's a woman going through something and she can't tell her husband because she feels like her husband might think it's her. Or that husband might say, want her to leave the job and say, right, I don't want you there. Or her husband might later on have an issue with the women. Mm-hmm. So it would be nice to hear the men talk as well. So just to hear them and then let them hear us. I think that's what's always worked for me when I think that's how MGTY made changes, by literally going into the people that we're police, whoever, and we're listening to what the police say as well and what their calls are, I think, and taking that on. And then that's how we come together. And I think that's how things like that make changes. I think doing, you know, like I said, with the fun at events and activities, we do like a women's group where it's about self-love and what is love and what is the difference between love and friends and love with your partner and love with, we talked about things like that. And then the men have their own, they're both interesting, because a lot of us come from, especially in the small communities, come from places that don't have a father.
Mm.
There's that as well. So we have these mixed separate men and women, but it's also good to come together and do events, fun events like paintballing and rock climbing, just to have a building relationship and break that barrier of men and women. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very interesting when you go, I never knew this until doing it myself. Doing activities, I didn't realise. I used to just go to activities because people ask me to come and want me to bring young people. So, okay. But actually, when they got together and they had to help each other out and had to pull each other and go on this and, yo, help me out, arm and leg, and then you fell over and someone helped you. That actually was building bonds between the women and the guys and the boys and the girls. And just different people. So things like this, doing things together, and we need more communities doing mixed events and projects that men and women like together to make it, you know, have more respect with each other.
Everyone come together. Now that's a great idea to enhance community cohesion and understanding. I asked Shaw what would make her feel safer on the streets.
I think more lights. And the thing is, I hate lights as well, because, like, for example, the side of my house, there's a little gully, like an entry bit. They have a few lights there now. They've had to put lights there. But we've never had problems. It's just really dark. It literally affects my house. That's it. Do you know what I mean? But I've had to get darker curtains. So just a few more lights on the road. Even in going into bars, I think security at the end of the night should have more responsibility on women's safety as well. If a woman's really, really drunk and she's on her own, or make sure that she's getting home safe. You get what I mean? Like phone a taxi or something for her. You can't force women. You're not mum or dad. But at least try. Do you get what I mean? Rather than throw her to the side, say, you're not getting in, and just dash her to the side. just see if she's okay.
Yeah.
You don't even know if it is alcohol or if it's someone spiked up. And I don't know if something like, if someone feels unsafe, it could be like something that they can be traced on the phone or something. And that ping someone, like, I used to say to my son, don't be trying to get away from me. Right? I'm going to get that thing on your phone. And there is an app that you can get on your phone. Now, nobody would really want that on the phone consistently. It would be nice if you could have that app. So if you was walking on the road at night and something happened, you could press that to say, to get an alarm to someone to say, look, I feel a bit troubled, but I'm on this road. Just let you know I'm on this road. You get what I mean? Or something. So they just know exactly. Yeah, I think that would be really good to let someone. There's so many people that don't even know where they are. People's attitudes definitely need to change. People need to stop walking past trouble. And there's a lot of people that before, if a girl was getting hit on the street, people would go over and try and stop it. Now people go over and take the camera out. Stop filming incidents. If you don't want to get involved, just phone the police.
Mm-hmm.
I think there should be more of them community officers at the nighttime walking on the street rather than just driving around, not just in the town centres, but in the actual quiet communities like ours and stuff. Walk around them. Like, you know, we used to go into the kebab shops at night, and remember back in the day, you used to see police in there sometimes, and officers, they don't see that as much. I literally don't see policemen at all. They're all on the, they're too busy looking at fast cars to see you speeding and stuff. You know what I mean? We need some more on the roads that are actually looking to look out for us women. We need to start making sure people are safe. There's so many people on the roads after concerts and stuff. They need to be making sure that they're safe as well. And, you know, them ones are very friendly as well. So come up to us and speak to us and just say, you okay? You know, you all right when you see us? And don't just be walking down the road. But I would definitely feel more safer with more lights and more friendly policemen on the road at night. Just to come and see if I'm okay. That'd be so lovely.
Oh, yeah. It all comes down to money, doesn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah, it does. I feel like, though, there should be some volunteer. I reckon if they did an actual thing where they did a voluntary thing, there'd be a lot of people that would actually get involved and just say, yeah, I'd do it. Do you get what I mean? They just need to do something. You get what I mean?
Well, let's finish on that great call to action. Volunteer, become a community safety officer and help to make our streets safer. We've covered lots of nuances in this brilliant conversation when it comes to safety on the streets. From more of a police presence, infrastructure changes like lighting, role models, social media, community cohesion, and listening to each other. A big thanks to Shah, and do head to mgty.co.uk to find out more about the fantastic work Shah is doing and how you can get involved.
A big thanks to Shah there. I found that a really interesting piece, primarily because as an avid digital marketer, how important it is that we focus on the safe use of social media as women, as young people in a society that expects so much of us that Shah's quite rightly pointed out. We have to consider what our social media is saying online and offline and what the consequences of that in real life are, as Shah so quite rightly articulates really, really well. But again, that comes back to finding your power, finding your voice, and understanding your boundaries and your ability to hold that power.
Yeah, I think it's important to get that honesty and that different perspective. And Shah is a great advocate for women and young people. And, you know, long may she and many of the other women change makers that we support continue to addressing the challenges that, you know, that lie ahead.
Absolutely, Nicola. That's it, is that we keep addressing it, we keep pushing it, we keep fighting for it, and that we do it together in the most effective way that we can. It's great to be creating a set of podcasts which look beyond social enterprise and the broader themes of social change. Plus, these tie in really well with our Flourishing Futures programme, helping diverse women look at building stronger personal, emotional and financial resilience. Look out on our socials and Eventbrite for upcoming details of ways to get involved.
So that's it for this episode, and a big thanks to everyone who's contributed. We'd love to hear what makes you feel safe on our streets or the places where you live, work or play. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Simply search Flourish Together CIC and directly tweet or Facebook comment and let us know about your key safety ideas and features.
See you next time.
Bye.